Hi, this is Tim Ferriss, author of The 4-Hour Workweek, 4-Hour Body, and The 4-Hour Chef, and you're listening to David Wood on The Kick-Ass Live Show.
Want to make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey everybody, it's the Ask Dave and
Jen.
Oh my goodness, that was kind of nice for you. What's going on?
It's kind of normal.
It's kind of normal. What happened? No, there's no freaky stuff. Jen Show. So Jen, we'll start with a little few gratitudes. What are you grateful for?
I'm grateful that we're flying home tomorrow from
Australia.
We're
flying home tomorrow.
I can't wait to get back to see the kids and to see Pam and see our friends and curl up in our bed.
Yes, it's always nice. That sort of getting back into your own bed after a month away is always kind of like there's something very, what's the word? All right.
But I'm also very grateful for all the friendships that we've either started while we've been here or have developed into stronger bonds and connections. It's been absolutely incredible.
We have met some really, really cool people and some really unusual. I mean, like not unusual, but people.
We've met some cool people and some not so cool people. That's what I thought you were going to say.
No, I didn't say that. They're all kind of cool. No, but we, I mean, some people that sort of came up in our life that were unexpected, like Sarah, who kind of like everyone called your sister because they knew you separately, and now you met her, you're thinking, oh, she's just like my sister.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
It's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm grateful for an amazing amount of trust that has been given to us to come over here each year and train this group of people. And I mean, almost 1,000 people were trained this time, so, well, 800, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty awesome. So, yeah, going home feeling that it was a great success.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah. Awesome.
As we toot our own little horns. Toot, toot.
Aww, I just feel full. My heart is full.
My heart is full. Anyway, so what are we doing?
Well, I'd like to start with a good old Aussie classic song.
We're going to start with a song without a question, going straight to a song.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah? Ready?
Let's do it.
Here we go.
Oh, yeah. Let's give it back. This one, yeah. Technical glitch there. I had that happen yesterday or day before on my Thursday show where I was trying to get a song to come up and it was buffering and it was like starting and stopping and start.
I hope you could hear that.
Yeah, I think you did. So
good old classic song in Australia.
All right. So we got some Ask-y Davey Jenny questions.
So our first question's from Leah.
We should talk about this though. Yeah. We've had a great day. We just spent what? We had a five-hour lunch.
It was
almost a six-hour lunch.
Yes.
And so we sat around downtown Sydney after a great morning.
With Elena and Vic.
Yep. Just having a really just chilled, laid-back time. It was great.
Great food. Oysters. Yum, yum,
some
yum.
Some of the best oysters you've eaten in a long time.
So good.
All right. So what's going on?
Leanne Luchka.
Hey, Leanne.
Hey, David and Jen.
Hey, Leanne.
About 10 years ago, I was part of a popular self-improvement group. On stage, the facilitator was charismatic and overall the message was very good and helped me get to my next stage. I had an occasion or two to speak with the facilitator and his answers didn't match up with the on-stage teachings. I just had a weird feeling. After I left the group, I found out that he was not living the talk he was teaching in his private life. Logically, I know that our teachers are only people on a journey the same as us, but years later I have reservations embracing the lessons learned because of his indiscretion. Can you speak to this?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that it's very common. I think if we said that a teacher in front of a room is indicative of a human being anywhere in their life, where it's quite common that people don't always walk that talk. You know, they learn something and they talk about it. But I think in my profession where I work with trainers, I'm very, very often, well, I'm not surprised anymore. I'm very often, I see somebody who's saying one thing on stage and living completely the opposite. And I've seen that with some very famous trainers. And it's really quite interesting because, you know, I suppose for you though, the fact that you are being bothered by it so many years later, I think it's probably time to let it go. And yeah, this guy's on a journey and he would find his own way and he would be, you know, either growing or not, and probably his audience would have grown or not because of the fact that people in the end pick up on whether someone's authentic, they're living their talk, right? And ultimately, if they don't, they find a way to crash and burn. So he's probably either, you know, really successful because he found his real way and he's living more authentically, or he's not. But for you to be held back by the fact that he had the indiscretion, I think that it's probably time to let that go and just realize that, you know, your radar picked up on who he was being, and it wasn't being who he said he was being, which means that you probably have a deeper sense of how you want to live and the fact that you want to be congruent, that there's a congruency part of you that says, hey, I'm not going to say these things if I don't live them, or I'm not going to sort of profess stuff that I don't, you know, I don't sort of act out every single day. So I think that's really a great testimony to who you are, that the only reason why you notice it is because you probably have a congruency factor or a level of integrity that's most important, right? So, but I would say let it go. Don't worry about it. And I think you're right. Everyone is on a journey, and I think we all make mistakes. And that's why I forgive so quickly. It's because whenever anyone does anything, I go, have I ever done anything similar to that? Have I ever done anything like that? And I always find the answer is, yeah, I've done that. So I just let people go, right? And the fact that he's on his journey. But I do say that, you know, if you're listening out there and you're a teacher or a trainer, if you're saying something from the front of a room and it's not something you live or it's not something you've learned or something that you act out every single, not act out, but that you, you know, you live into, then I would change that, because I think in the end your audience is going to smell something on you that's not, you know, quite right or it's not congruent. So, yeah. How's that, Jen?
Awesome, honey.
You look like you're busy over there, like, typing stuff in.
Well, Leanne had asked me to play a song to make her smile, and I had one in mind, and I can't find it.
Oh, dear. Frustration. So, Leanne, here we go. Let's sing one for her. What will make her smile?
If you're happy and you know it.
Hold on, Leanne. There was no way we talked about that before. I looked at Jen, and we both started singing the same song. Isn't that true?
There is not
a chance that we talked about that. All right, here we go. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, and you really want to show it. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're not smiling now, then you need to have a warm bath.
I will continue to look for this song because I love this song and it makes me smile. But anyway, we'll move on. Our next question is from David Moore. He says, hey guys, when you get kicked down, when you lose everything, when you're lost, how do you find the strength to keep going? And how do you push past your own loss to help others when you feel you're not achieving what you want, but people look up to you?
Well, great question, Dave. I think that what's interesting about the question is that, you know, where's your focus, right? Your focus is on the loss. It's focus on what's not going right. It's focus on what was that it no longer is. And that's always dangerous. I mean, I see it every day, you know, with people who were embezzled by their partner and lost $1 million. And 20 years later, they're still kind of whining about it or professing about it. I mean, just get over it. I mean, whatever happens in our life, we have to be able to step over it. And so, you know, I mean, loss could be of many things, loss of stature, loss of a person, loss of, you know, a fortune. But I mean, I think that we just have to, as we evolve as a human being, is just not attach anything or so much to, you know, stuff. or the fact that we expect people to be around, you know, or, you know, losing a husband, losing a friend, losing whatever, right? I mean, it's just going to happen. The very natural course of life is that, you know, we're going to go through life and things will change constantly. In fact, the only thing that we know for sure is things will change. And so, you know, I'm not really sure what your loss is. I wish I did know, because I may sound very, very cruel by me saying just get over it. But truth is, Oprah lost her innocence at the age of 9 when she was raped, right? But she got over it and she changed the world because of it. And Gandhi freed a nation because of a loss of dignity when he was, you know, ridiculed in South Africa because of his color. You know, I just think that there are so many. I mean, Nelson Mandela lost his freedom for 27 years in prison, and he came out and changed the whole nation and with such great forgiveness and love, right? So I think that there's a definitive way that we have to approach loss. But if we focus on the loss, there's a great saying that says, "What I focus on expands." So if you're having something goes wrong, you have a terrible day, you're having a, you know, whatever it is, right? We stay there and focus on it. It's just like it never gets better. So how do you get through it? You just got to get up, focus on, I mean, what is it you want to do? What is it what's your end result? What would you love to do? If you had a magic wand that could do anything, what would you do? If you could design your life in any way you want, what would it look like? But typically you just got to get off your couch and you've got to get out of your story and start writing a new story. And typically it's great if you can help people, if you can volunteer, if you can get involved. But you've just got to focus on the things you want and not the obstacles that stand in the way. I mean, Randy Pausch had this great saying. It says, you know, the obstacles aren't there to keep us out. The obstacles are there to see if we want it bad enough. And I just see so many people who get sort of frozen in one spot because of circumstances or because of what happens to them. But then you've got to just compare down. There's a bazillion people in the world who have, and that's a lot, by the way. There's a bazillion people in the world who've had so many things happen that far exceed some of the stuff that you've probably gone through. And they found the strength and the courage to, you know, just go to a higher level, to step into something greater. And so will you. But, you know, as long as you're stuck in the story, you won't, right? So you just got to get through the story, focus on what you want, take a step, and leave it behind and shrug it off. You know, forgive those people who have got you into that place. Or, you know, if it's a physical action, I mean, you know, again, I look at Oprah as a great inspiration of someone who really could have stayed in a very negative story her whole life, but she didn't. She changed the world. You know, but to be raped at 9 years of age, I mean, that's a very, very harsh thing to have happen. But, you know, that's what I look for. I look for stories where people have traveled through a road that is so far greater than the one I'm on. I say, you know what? I have that resilience inside of me. I can find within me a greater courage to take a bigger step and not get stuck in an old story that means nothing and keeps me feeling poorly about myself. So hopefully that helps.
A saying that I have recently found and love to use is, falling down is part of life. Getting back up is living.
Wow, I like it. Well, Jen, look at you. Huh? Did you look that up?
No, I posted it on my Happitude page.
Nice.
Recently.
Very nice. I like it.
I like it too.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
If you're happy and you know it, clap, stomp your feet. All right, next question. Hi, David and Jen. Love your stuff and thank you. I'm new to the podcast and I'm appreciating the words of wisdom.
Confucius say the word of wisdom.
You're so wise. Thank you
for the word of wisdom. It come from many hours. I'm contemplating my belly button.
And the fluff. I have a 6-year-old son who I am bringing up on my own. His father is a gambling addiction, so I have therefore been trying to not expose my son to any of this, which is difficult, especially living in Melbourne. A friend recently suggests not exposing him to it may have a detrimental effect, and that I should expose him in a positive light to it. I'm battling with this as I have major concerns that addiction may be hereditary, but now realize that hiding him from it may cause more intrigue.
Well, you know, I mean, again, caveat, I'm no expert, right? But I just know, I've trained so many people who are older and stuck. Most people stuck in this story of, you know, they're not good enough, their self-worth is small, right? They don't love themselves, they don't love their imperfection. So, I mean, I'd say that most people in the world I've ever worked with are not hopelessly in love with who they are and their imperfection. So, I mean, let's talk about it. So addiction. Is addiction, can it be hereditary? I'm sure, you know, learned behaviors can be passed down. I'm no expert in that. But what I believe in is, like my kids, I can't tell you how many adults I see, they speak to their kids about drugs and they pretend that they never did it themselves. They did it, right? They went through this whole thing. They grew up in the 60s. And so they sort of talk to their kids as if they've never done it. And I think that there's a better way, personally. I mean, my kids are 15 and 13. But my kids know everything I've done. I mean, they know the drugs I've done. They know, you know, the jail time I've done. They know the cars I've stolen. I want them to hopefully learn from my mistakes so they don't have to learn from their own mistakes. So when you protect somebody from something with such an amount of fear, then when they finally get to it on their own, they have no capacity to understand it. So then they could easily step through that door. But I think if you can be open to the fact that, you know, with any kid, to have a conversation, because I think kids are so astute. I think they know everything. I think they really already know when parents are lying to them. And a lot of you listening right now are probably lying to your kids thinking it's going to protect them. I don't know if I'm right by telling them the truth, but I would rather think that, I would rather my kids know that I have gone down a road where I've made mistakes and I've had to make choices which didn't serve me, and that they can learn from that in some meaningful way. All right, so let's talk about the two things there. First of all, your husband has a gambling addiction, right? The second part is that he's the child's dad. And so so let's say that I have an anger problem, or some other parents have a drinking problem, or someone has a whatever problem it is, right? But the love of the child has got nothing to do with the addiction. And so, you know, I think that as long as, you know, the separation of those two things can occur, because a lot of us love parents who aren't perfect, or love parents who have, you know, have made mistakes, or love parents who have gone to jail, or love parents who, you know, were convicted felons, or love parents who were drug addicts, whatever, right? I think a lot of us have experienced things with our parents that will allow us to say, you know what, the love of our parent has got quite nothing to do with the fact that they have a problem. Now, your husband's got an addiction with gambling, but the distance you have with him, in other words, when you feel that he's a threat, you are going to distance yourself from him, and you're going to have a lot of negative energy. And I think that in that negative energy, right, two things can happen. One is, he could fall deeper into addiction because he feels isolated from his child, isolated from you. Or you can fall into a relationship where, you know what, you accept that he has a gambling problem, and that you get back into the relationship of being a mom and dad. Not that you have to love him, because obviously you don't, but you can be in relationship with him where you could end up becoming a great influence. And in fact, the love of his son could be the exact reason he wants to have to get out of it, as opposed to this kind of separation thing that goes on with so many parents and so many people that are separated. So I think that there's, you know, I'm not sure if I've answered the question clearly or not. I do think that kids need to know your truth. I do, at the right, appropriate time, right? So they can learn from the mistakes we've made. And so what I talk about my kids, because I did a lot of drugs when I was younger, right? And I just talk about, I say, listen, guys, you know, I did it, and you're going to have to make your own choice. And I hope you're strong enough to say no. If I could rewind it, I wish I'd said no in many instances. But today I said to him, I said, look, if you lose your passport, because both my kids love to travel, I said, so if you lose your passport and you can't travel anymore because of it, you know, they speak Swedish and French, and I think my boys are really going to be ambassadors of the world. I said, so because you smoke a joint or you get caught with marijuana, you can't go into the United States. So it really starts this spiral going on. So I want to give them sort of a something that's meaningful, where they're going to make a choice to say no because it's more important to them than, hey, this guy's got this. I used to do drugs, stay away from me because I'm an addict or whatever else like that, right? So, but I think kids do better when they understand the problem as opposed to being hidden from it. So yes, would I expose them? Yes. But I would urge you to find a way to find a relationship with your son and his father. I mean, now, if he's a complete loser, I get it. But even a complete loser loving his son the best way he can, whether it's for 10 minutes a week or whatever it is, I do think that there is a need. I mean, I didn't see my father from the age of 7 to 15. But when I saw him, I immediately was in love with him because somehow he's my dad, right? And I mean, Jen, you didn't see your parents till, I mean, you were adopted, so you didn't see your parents till you were, what age, 21? 20, right? And so there's an immediate connection somehow deep, deep down inside, right?
Absolutely.
So I'm not sure if I got off subject here. I'm sort of going one way from the other, but
yeah.
I could be babbling here right now, but I do think, so my answer to your question is, yeah, I think exposing kids to the truth is better for them, if I was to say that in a...
That's a good summary, right?
Yeah,
there.
Is that a good summary? Yeah. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Was I babbling?
A little, yeah. A little off topic, a little squirrel moment there.
Okay.
It's good.
You know.
That's why we love you, David.
Okay.
How about a song requested by Sarah Use?
All right.
Just breathe.
Just breathe. That's
in,
awesome.
I'm out. Just in. Like in Karate Kid. Breathe in.
Breathe in through your nose.
Breathe out. Don't forget to breathe.
No, wax on, wax off. Don't forget to breathe.
Don't forget to breathe. So Sarah's question says, hey guys, how are you? I have an MLM question. So
all right, I'm on it.
Question about network.
I won't babble, I promise. I'll do my best. It's been a long month, so like we're just about to leave back to Canada, so I'm feeling a little bit like, you know, laying in the chair here, so I do apologize.
Laying in the chair.
You know, I'm just...
How do you lay in a chair?
You know.
Should I get you a glass of champagne?
Oh, soon, yes.
Yes,
soon.
Okay. Sarah's asking, how do I get my people motivated to connect to the organization's systems, meetings, and events? Also, how to be the best leader without doing all the work for them? P.S. Your Thailand pictures are awesome.
Thailand pictures are awesome, thanks. Well, two parts of the question. So the first part is, how do you get connected to the organization?
How do you connect your people to systems, meetings, and events?
Well, you have to use the systems, meetings, and events. So you have to be the person that uses the system. So if you don't use it, your people won't. So from the second they walk in the door, your second part about enabling as opposed to empowering. I mean, if someone joins a network marketing company, the best thing you can do the day they sign up, so they're just about to sign up, is have them go in the back office themselves and sign up themselves. You just walk them through it. So they're already sort of doing their own stuff. But the best thing you can do is actually get them to an event, get them sort of immersed in the culture, right? So that's one of the best ways, especially if it's a great culture. But, you know, I think you really have to be the example. You have to sort of walk the talk. But I think the bigger problem is that we often recruit the wrong people. So what it is there, you know, a lot of people in network marketing, they try and convince, they try and say, oh, you just come in, just try it for 30 days. There's all that kind of begging going on. Instead of the better question is, when you're building a real strong residual income, and when I sort of talk to people about network marketing, because I truly believe that every single person in the world, when they understand the power of the industry and how to find the right company and what it's like to be a part of a community of network marketers, I believe that everyone in the world, and you'll see it, I mean, most of the top leaders of the world right now, Warren Buffett, Robert Kiyosaki, Donald Trump, they all absolutely believe in this industry. Why? Because it's so dynamic. It's amazing. And I believe in it. I believe in it wholeheartedly, deep, deep down in my core. Right? So the idea is, when you sort of start talking to people, if you bring the right people in with the right conversation, they're going to do the right actions. But a lot of people don't. They actually won't have a business conversation with them. And like, look at Jen and I this week. We've been working with people that are making $83,000 a month, $63,000 a month, $50,000 a month, $30,000 a month, 25-year-old making $30,000 a month, right? That's crazy, crazy, crazy good money. I mean, it's crazy good money. But these people have had to grow into that over a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, the $80,000 a month. They've been 5.5 years, right? First network marketing company. Many, many people we work with here in Australia is their very, very first network marketing company, right? But what happens is, again, this old stigma we carry around, this idea that we have to sell our friends is nonsense. We don't. But if I could show you a better way, if I could show you a way where you could have complete freedom, where you can have amazing relationships, where you can write your own ticket, never have a glass ceiling on your income, and your income can grow as much as you grow every single year, where you can have a global business, where you can fire your boss, you can write your own rules, you don't have to have the skills of conventional business. What this so makes sense. And when people get that right up front, when you sign somebody up, when you bring them into your business as a business equal, as a business partner, they will do the right things. But most don't. We kind of, you know, just try the product, blah, blah, blah. And the product could be life-changing, which most are, right? I mean, I've been on the products I use for 8.5 years. I mean, of course, I will never stop taking them. I totally believe in them. But truly, if I want to talk to someone about building a business, then my business conversation is such where, like, I ask this question: how much money do you have to invest in your business? And they'll say, I mean, the last guy we spoke to said $15,000. Awesome, great. So they have to use $3,000 of it to get in this particular company, let's say, right? If they were, but why? Because they buy a business builder pack, they have a business building mindset, and they have to buy a ticket to one of the major events. Now, they get to that major event, they get so immersed in the culture, but they bought the ticket the day they started. They didn't wait 6-8 months and they sort of dabble in. They came in with a complete business philosophy, and it's so different. And that's what you've got to transition to. You've got to transition from sort of being half in yourself to being fully immersed yourself, and you've got to start treating it like a real business, then it will pay you like an incredible business owner. What do you think, Jen?
Yeah, go for it. I totally drift.
Did you drift
I'm
up?
Hearing wah, 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 wah.
Is this going to be one of those worst shows we've ever done? Is that what's going on? Am I like, sorry, it's been a long day. That's all I'm telling you. Oh my God, even Jen won't listen to me.
I'm so sorry.
A squirrel.
Well, yeah, I was trying to do too many things at once. Never mind. Honey,
are we done?
Yeah, that's it.
That's it? No more music? No nothing?
No more questions. I could pick a song. You want me to play a song?
When you pick, what was the smiling song you felt?
I was trying to play my most favorite song, but yeah.
What was the highlight of your month here in Australia?
The people.
The people? You made some new friends. I saw that.
Beautiful. I made some beautiful friends. Yeah. I had a reunion with Jasmine.
Yeah.
It's all been amazing.
Awesome. Yeah. And we are leaving tomorrow morning. So do you have a song? So we're going to play a song for all of you out there. And I do apologize if I'm babbling today, because there's those moments, you know, my little well runneth dry.
How about a little Aussie?
Let's try it.
Aussie.
Osborne? What time is it? We are 27 minutes. Oh my gosh, we're early. So, aww, what time is it?
I want to just continue dancing.
You want
to, I wanted to finish with Leanne actually says, see you on the other side. Isn't that something they used to say before you flipped the record or the cassette tape? See you on the flip side?
Is that where I get? I must be so old. Maybe somewhere deep in my psyche I picked that up.
I also think it might be a little surf thing. See you on the flip side.
See you on the flip side.
That's what surfers sound like?
Yeah.
Do that again?
Flip side. All right. So it's your job to end the show. Can you?
Well, on that note, we will see you on the other side.
Yeah, baby. Okay. You're so cute, by the way.
That That was kick-ass.